Now, does that, doesn't that not resolve your conflict?
I think it does, yeah. It's, you know.
No way to get there from here.
No, I think it does resolve, because you're talking about the promoter situation rather than the one who engages in a single act intercourse with a prostitute.
Which then is back on the battle in Section 3, or on the inchoate crime bit. Okay. All right, let's go on, unless there's no comments, we'll go on to 7 and 8, and I want to get back and pass these or defeat them shortly. And I think 7 and 8 ought to move pretty swiftly. Raj?
Yeah, Section 7, we're talking about corroboration. A person shall not be convicted under Sections 4 and 6, and that's the promoting and compelling statutes of this article, solely on the uncorroborated testimony of the person whose prostitution he is alleged to have promoted or compelled.
Any comment?
No. Is that the law now?
167.140. It broadens the law some in that it applies to more areas than it probably does now. 167.140. Upon a trial for inveigling, enticing, or taking away an unmarried female for the purpose of prostitution, the defendant cannot be convicted upon the testimony of the female injured unless she is corroborated by other evidence. And this expands that to cover more conduct than that statute does.
Okay. All right. Any comment or feeling on it? All right, let's go into 8.
This is a restatement of present law in Oregon, the issue of evidence. On the issue of whether a place is a place of prostitution as defined in subsection 4 of section 1 of this article, its general repute and the repute of persons who reside in or frequent the place shall be competent evidence. In any prosecution under subsection 3 of section 6, and that's the compelling.
Yeah, well, the inducing cognitive. Yeah. Inducing.
A wife is a competent witness against her husband.
Comment? Okay, let's go back to 1 and start cranking these things out, or amending, or... Now, we've been through all the areas of definition. Where does prostitution enterprise...
Enterprise, I don't remember that. Where do we have that?
It's number 4. Promotion.
Number 400.
Four. Enterprise prostitution.
Maintains a place of prostitution or a prostitution enterprise.
Where did you read that?
And that's directed at the
four.
At the pimp who has women working for him that don't operate out of one particular situs, but call girl operations.
And sub 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Prostitution enterprise or enterprise of prostitution. Either way.
On motion.
Yeah.
Move the adoption of section 1.
May I ask, make one technical suggestion of drafting? Would it not be better in subsection 1, instead of including the definition and cross-reference, to simply incorporate it by cross-reference, for the purpose being that if section 1, article 12, is ever changed, and you'd have a conflict if somebody didn't notice this.
Yeah. Of course, we're dead if throughout the statute if they don't notice them.
Well, I think for our purposes now, we can delete the reference to the section. Actually, that article reference is just for convenience now, okay. George, anyway. Just so we know where to look for it.
Well, it would be as defined in ORS 165.
Yeah.
Point something, something, something. Well, if that's the case, George, would you still want the...
No, no problem.
Oh, okay. Any other comment on 1? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Prostitution.
Move it, pass it.
Okay, it's been moved that we pass section two, approve section two as written, definition of prostitution. A crime, right? Any comment? We all satisfied with fee, that's where we hung up a little bit last time, but...
Could I ask George a question? Now, with respect to our language, offers or agrees, is there any overlap or conflict with inchoate crimes from the standpoint of attempted prostitution, for example?
Yeah, it's I think it's kind of unnecessary to say offers or agrees, because those are really the crimes of solicitation and conspiracy, to offer or to agree.
You mean the offer is really the crime of solicitation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why we use both the terms, because if the offer originates with the prostitute, the word offer would apply, but if it originates from the patron and she agreed, you might have two different situations.
Yeah, don't we?
It's just my impression, Don, that you don't need the phrase or offers or agrees. It's simply a person commits a crime of prostitution if he engages.
Well, then, George, don't we have the problem that we talked about earlier, the vice squad problem of you never really, I mean, the problem you brought up in this whole area, that we are now forcing the officer, he either has to charge them with soliciting, the inchoate crimes, conspiracy or soliciting, or he has to commit the act to get him for prostitution. If we don't take, I can see what you're, I think academically you're correct. Aren't we opening ourselves, even driving the cop even further into the torch?
Have a lot of new applications for the job.
Yeah, because that's true. I mean, if they want to go, if they want to have evidence gathered by an undercover man to charge him with prostitution, he's going to have to engage in sexual conduct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Undercover. I didn't get a chance to compliment you, Roger, when you were talking about corroboration, when you were talking about bare testimony of a complainant. Well, you brought this problem up, Donnie. I was sitting here minding my own business.
Well, I wanted your expert view on this.
I suppose it doesn't cause any problem, but it really is making the crime of conspiracy, it's defining the crime of conspiracy here, where the act isn't actually performed.
Man,
I don't think it'll
so
hurt
easy.
Anything. I don't guess it'll hurt anything, because the penalty result's going to be the same.
I can just see this police officer coming back and...
We're going to charge him with, Charlie.
I'm charging him with prostitution. Well, did you engage in sexual conduct? Well, no, I didn't, Sarge. Well, you should have charged him with an inchoate crime. With a what? Better luck next time.
Yeah, right.
Well, anyway, it's...
Well, thanks for bringing it up, Don. Anybody else got a...
You're in contempt of the committee. I already passed that motion about your problem, you know.
Okay.
Any other comment on this? I think we should point out to the full committee, however, that we are engaging in some redundancy here, some overlap. But I think this is one area that's necessary. Okay.
Well, as a matter of fact, as this law is traditionally applied, you could probably do away with the word engages in, because I don't know of any prosecutions that have been brought where the party is actually engaged in sexual conduct. It's usually always offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then we'd be eliminating the crime of prostitution.
Yeah,
there have been cases where
there was
you've
a completed
got
act.
Yeah, sure.
A third party.
Sure, a third party, and they're being observed, or they're, it's a raid or something like that.
That's right, the Multnomah County District Attorney.
Yeah, Van Oversen. True that. Okay, let's vote on adoption of Section 2. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Section 3 is dead.
Is there going to be a motion on 3?
I think there has been a motion on 3, hasn't there?
I think Mr. Jernstead, Senator Jernstead.
I think we talked about it.
Oh, I think we moved, I'm quite sure section three is, I'd be glad to do it again.
No, I think there was a vote to delete section three.
Okay.
Led by Harl Haas.
Yes, right, with a note to bring that up when George gets back to, when we get into the code trying to, we'll do battle on that. Okay, the secretary's notes reflect section three has been deleted. Section four, promoting a prostitute, does somebody want to move those amendments, or have they been moved?
They've been moved, they're just on the table.
Okay, the amendments then, do you want to read them again, Don?
Yeah, section four, would be amended to read, a person commits the crime of promoting prostitution if, with the intent to promote prostitution, he knowingly. So we've added another intent element.
All right, you've heard the motion, it's been made before, I understand, and is in abeyance here, so those in favor of adding, as Don has read to you, to section four, the definition there, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, those opposed nay, carried. Now, is that all the only amendment on section four?
Yes.
All right, whoops, Ken or Harl move, Harl moves the adoption of section four as amended. Any comment? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed nay.
I have one question on section four.
It's carried, all right.
Well, we've added language with the intent to promote prostitution, and you'll notice in sub four, is there any redundancy here? We got engages in any conduct with the intent to institute, aid, or facilitate. Hmm. We've got a person commits a crime of promoting prostitution if, with the intent to promote prostitution, he knowingly engages in any conduct with the intent to institute, aid, or facilitate an act or enterprise of prostitution. Is that second intent necessary?
If we could amend by just striking out with the intent down there, could not put that there. Reading
I don't know if it'll read right.
Well, let's say a person commits the act of crime of promoting prostitution if he knowingly or with the intent to promote prostitution, if he knowingly engages in any conduct to institute, aid, or facilitate an act or enterprise of prostitution.
Yeah.
That'd
yeah,
be
that reads number.
Okay, we'll return to section four. Harl, do you want to run through that again? Paragraph four, amendment.
Yeah.
On motion.
Amending subsection 4 of section 4, striking with the words with the intent.
All right. You were back on section 4. You've heard the motion. Any comments? All those in favor of amending section 4, sub 4, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Okay, let's Harl moves the readoption. Section 4 as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. Okay, 5.
There was a motion to delete section 5.
Okay, the motion has been made to delete section 5. Any comments? Give me a moment. Could you tell me briefly why?
The feeling was that the kind of actor that you were trying to get at could be prosecuted under section 4.
And the innocent landlord and that kind of stuff was okay, any further comment on deletion? The motion is, I understand, in advance to delete section 5. All those in favor of deleting section 5 will indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed nay. Carried. Section 6. Section 6 has been amended. Do we have a motion to adopt section 6 as amended? Harl moves to adopt section 6 as amended. Any further comment? Now, with another is out. So the only amendments are adding induces or and striking or aids in sections subs 2 and 3. Right?
You don't add causes in there then?
Well, we add induces or and causes stays in, we strike or aids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all those in favor of adopting section 6 as amended, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Section 7.
Further adoption.
Senator Jernstead moves the adoption of section 7. Discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried, section eight. Evidence, Representative Haas moves the adoption of section eight as written. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. Oh, great power that be, we'll go with this now from here.
Well, this brings us,
in the 10 minutes that Harl has on campus here.
It brings us to homicide. Now, I suppose that if nothing else, since Professor Pyle was kind enough to come up here today, and he had knowing full well we might not get to this article, that he at least to...
Excuse me, before I forget it, I should have added one thing. We're going to have to incorporate the definition of public place into this article also.
Okay.
Which we didn't vote on.
I don't think that's a mechanic thing. I won't take that vote.
No.
But perhaps if it's all right with you, Mr. Chairman, we have maybe
George
give us the
an
overview of the article anyway.
Let me get a cup of coffee. I can hear you. Anybody else want a cup?
I do. Let's let them get our own.
I'm going to talk about section one. I thought maybe I'd talk about the policy changes that were involved in the article generally. With respect to murder first, the most substantial change, I suppose, is the elimination of degrees of murder in Oregon, and this follows a pattern of the Model Penal Code, certainly. Purpose of the elimination of degrees, I suppose, is explained on the historic basis of the reason why there were degrees originally, and that was predominantly to allow a place for treating the homicide less seriously than capital punishment. That is premeditation. Premeditated murder traditionally carried, any kind of murder carried the punishment of death with it. And to get away from the harshness of that rule, the old Pennsylvania system of degrees was initiated in this country. I think it's still the predominant system that most have followed. Well, we don't have capital punishment, obviously, in Oregon, and for that reason, there's no longer a need to have degrees. And perhaps even more important is that how the degrees are differentiated is very artificial. In my comment, I point out that it's hard to choose the blameworthiness between the man who takes a loaded revolver and shoots into a group of people, which currently in Oregon would be second-degree murder under the recklessness of the act doctrine, as opposed to the man who is otherwise a pillar of society, who kills his wife's paramour in the heat of, with premeditation, would be murder in the first degree, clearly. I doubt very much if you could say that the man who kills his wife's lover under a situation like that is more dangerous than the man who goes around shooting loaded guns into rooms of people without any premeditation in the sense at all. And yet one is viewed under the degree theory, and the husband would be punished or subject to punishment more severe than the one who is clearly the more dangerous, I think. Well, at any rate, the differentiation of murder by degrees has become quite artificial, especially in light of the case law, not only Oregon but throughout the country, of determining what is premeditation, the difference between what does it take to premeditate, how much time does it take to premeditate, as compared with the recklessness doctrine of second-degree murder. And the way I read the cases, and I believe that the Model Penal Code also takes the view that any instant in time is enough for premeditation. If you think about it just fleetingly before you actually perform the act, that this is enough to satisfy premeditation, then distinguishing that from the reckless act doctrine is almost impossible. It's metaphysical, really, when you stop to think about it. So there isn't too great a legal distinction anymore at all between premeditation and the depraved heart, reckless act doctrine of second-degree murder. That's the first principle change that's made. Now, the second principle change in murder is the way that felony murder is treated. Currently, there are 2 degrees of felony murder. Death resulting from rape, robbery, arson, and kidnapping, I believe, is defined as first-degree murder in Oregon, first-degree felony murder. No premeditation, obviously, with respect to the killing. Second-degree felony murder is death resulting from any other felony, and that's the way it reads, any other felony. Now, this can result in some pretty unjust situations. I believe the case law in the country is beginning to turn away from the felony murder doctrine in the sense that at one time it had gone to great extremes of applying the felony murder doctrine to situations which where the death was purely accidental as a result of a robbery, where it could be identified as much more accidental than growing out of a dangerous activity, or where the innocent bystander, for instance, is shot by the policeman, or the cohort is killed by the police. Still, the cases have found in the past that this is felony murder. I think there's a turn away from that. The cases seem to show now in California and Pennsylvania, or Massachusetts, I guess it is, turning away from that extreme absolute liability doctrine for murder. Now, this draft certainly doesn't turn away from felony murder, but it adopts the New York approach, which I think is a little less liberal than the model penal code approach. And New York provides that if the death results while you're committing certain listed felonies, and this list I set out here is fairly arbitrary, and you may want to change that as we go along. But at any rate, if death results there, it is murder, but there are certain defenses which are placed on, which are created for the defendant. They're narrow. There are a number of them. If he can prove all of these, if he can conform to the necessary proof, burden on him by a preponderance of the evidence, he can escape the felony murder, that is the murder charge. It, however, would be reduced perhaps to manslaughter, what he did, depending on the character of his act, of the death that resulted. So that rather than looking at the absolute liability theory of any death resulting in the commission of a certain felony, we focus instead on the activity of the actor in the light of whether the activity is knowing, intentional, reckless, or negligent. And if it is one or the other of these, of course, we'll find that the corresponding level of homicide applies. Now, suicide is treated in that murder section, but I don't think there's any substantial difference from the existing law in Oregon, so I wouldn't make any comments about that at the present time. Is there any reason, do you want to stop talk about this, or shall I go on to manslaughter?
Oh, no, however you want to handle it.
Whatever's up to you.
Well, brief overview about manslaughter makes some substantial changes again in the Oregon law, because it changes first the old standard provocation theory of voluntary manslaughter, that is the heat of passion test, which reduces murder to manslaughter in Oregon and was a traditional common law concept. We turn away from that by replacing the heat of passion provocation test with new language, which is much broader, which is more subjective, but nonetheless retains safeguards of the objectivity that's necessary, I think, if a new theory of manslaughter is going to be adopted and have any practical effect. In short, it provides that if the homicide is performed by someone under the influence of extreme mental or emotional disturbance, this is a phrase from the Model Penal Code, that takes the place of the heat of passion and would allow the actor to show that words are enough, for instance. In the old law, mere words are not sufficient provocation, usually. An unexpected reaction to a therapeutic drug which produces an emotional reaction in the person resulting in his killing someone would enable him to bring in this kind of evidence to reduce the homicide from murder to manslaughter. The test retains objectivity, however, in that the explanation must be reasonable. The word reasonable appears. Viewed from the situation of the defendant, or one in his, let's see, how's that phrase? Determined from the standpoint of a person in the actor's situation, under the circumstances as he believes them to be. Explaining that, I suppose, there's a famous English case where a prostitute, which is appropriate, I think, for this afternoon's discussion, is jeering at a customer who is impotent and I think otherwise physically deformed, and she is really making fun of him, and he reacts from this jeering by stabbing her to death. Now, in the case, the heat of passion test was not allowed because a reasonable man would not react that way. And the court refused in England to apply the standpoint of the defendant or his situation test. So what this does, of course, is allows the defendant to bring in what his own abilities are to explain his action. But it does not mean that this will be a complete defense because it provides that the explanation must be viewed as reasonable by the jury. It does not impose his moral views. We don't go by his view of morality. We only take into consideration things that the heat of passion test has not taken in, that it's physical defects, the situation, in short, in which the defendant finds himself. Now, the second major change in the manslaughter provisions abrogates the approach to the misdemeanor manslaughter rule, the old unlawful act doctrine, which has come into disrepute because it is applied so arbitrarily to produce or potentially produce absolute liability again for any act that's a misdemeanor at the outset. Now here I'm referring to the striking of one blow in an argument which results in death. Now the blow is clearly a battery, a misdemeanor. If the person falls, strikes his head on the sidewalk or a table and dies as a result, the actor is usually prosecuted and successfully, I'm not able to predict if this would be true in Oregon, but generally around the country, would be prosecuted under the old unlawful act, misdemeanor manslaughter rule, with absolute liability for his act flowing from that one blow, so that he would be found guilty of manslaughter. Now there are actual cases on the books that make this doctrine look much worse still, and I refer in my notes to a case where someone merely shoved the person through a screen door, a relatively minor battery. The person cut his thumb and died from tetanus, and there was a conviction for manslaughter. Now this obviously seems to be an arbitrary and unreasonable, unjust application of the homicide law. After all, the negligence and the recklessness of that act should be viewed from the homicide standpoint rather than the result of the simple battery as a homicide. The draft would, in short, mean that the application would be that the defined manslaughter arising out of these misdemeanor acts, the act itself must be so reckless to support manslaughter or so negligent in the criminal sense as to support negligent homicide before a conviction could be had for homicide. Now, this doesn't mean you can't convict, of course, for the battery. There's no doubt about that. All right, so this then, I would say, is definitely a shift away from the present Oregon law. Now, I wasn't able to really determine whether Oregon applies in such an arbitrary fashion its misdemeanor manslaughter rules. I simply didn't find enough cases to come to that conclusion. But the opportunity is there, I think, for an abuse of the application of the homicide statutes, and that this would forestall, and I think justifiably, the wrong application of the unlawful act doctrine. The question no longer is the act unlawful? The question is it reckless or is it negligent with substantial homicidal risk involved? The last major provision is for negligent homicide, criminally negligent homicide. Remember now we define criminal negligence to mean a substantial risk that one should be aware of, but is not necessarily aware of, which may cause homicide. And in this now would probably fall these kind of cases of misdemeanor manslaughter where the act is merely negligent in the first instance from the creation of homicidal risk. And if any convictions are going to be had on these situations, I suppose, it'd probably be under this section, and maybe not at all, depending on the jury's reaction to the risk created by the battery. Negligent homicide, of course, includes the automobile homicide section that now exists, and I don't think makes any change whatsoever with respect to the test for the homicide. Oregon, like every other state, has had great difficulty in defining what negligence is with respect to manslaughter. the model penal code version as adopted in the earlier work of this commission, I think eliminates a lot of these problems, and the definition of criminal negligence adopted by this commission, or soon to be adopted, if not yet adopted, reflects, I believe, what the case law in Oregon presently is with respect to gross negligence in automobile homicide cases. So they would fall here without change, except this grading is a low grade felony, is the lowest grade felony for negligent homicide in the model penal code. I believe it's an indictable misdemeanor, is it not, under the present law
for
automobiles?
Yes.
So there's a policy question there that the commission's going to have to deal with. It may feel that the automobiles take special treatment because of the penalty provisions, not because of the test in the first place. I have not dealt with that because I thought it was somewhat beyond the immediate problems. That's a very fast overview. I suppose I missed some points that are going to be obviously new to Oregon law, but I think those are the major differences that this draft reflects.
Thank you, George. Any comments, questions on the review summary before we... Harl, what's your time situation? You got to get on your horse.
I've got to get on. I've got to be on court at 3:30.
Well, with Lee gone, I'm reluctant to press forward. Again, with just the two of us, we'll have to back up and do it all over again when our troops get remarshaled. Appreciate you coming up, George. I'm sorry we only got around 10 minutes, but I'm glad you got in on time to help us on prostitution. Don, what's your pleasure? Button it up and...
Yeah, I think we should, Mr. Chairman. Let's see, I was trying to think what our schedule is. Have we... We set another meeting yet.
Before you go, let's kind of look.
Ones that are set.
I think this today was the last meeting we had set for this subcommittee, wasn't it?
This is the Criminal Law Revision Commission, Subcommittee Number 3, 1 p.m., Room 315, Capitol Building. Today's subject, riot and disorderly conduct, preliminary draft number one, criminal homicide, preliminary draft number one.
Had written to the school board in Portland with a request for suggestions from them on this loitering in or near a school building problem, and I talked to Bob Ridgely, who's on the school board there, and he was most interested in it and glad that we had contacted them for their views. And he did say specifically one of the biggest problems they have is the kids that, and this is tied into racial situations, is the group of kids, either black or white, that wait across the street at the time school lets out. And then when the blacks or the whites, whatever it may be, leave the school building and cross the street, why then there's catcalls and pushing and shoving and all this kind of thing. He says they have a policy that as far as if you're in the school building itself or even on the grounds, why they just, if they don't leave, why they prosecute them for trespass under the present statute. But he was very glad we had contacted him, and I was glad to see Don followed up with the letter. So I thought I'd report that.
This is something that they are concerned about and like to have some authority or something somewhere to...
Yeah, they're very concerned about it. He did say that he was sure they would respond, and they hoped to respond in writing. He said that as far as he was concerned, they wanted their position firmly stated and clearly stated. And they've had a lot of trouble with it, not just near Adams High School, but that's where some of it has been this year. And it's a continual headache to them. So I'm hopeful we'll get some practical experience on it and their views on it. And I told him that we would, it'd be some time yet before we'd be taking this up with a full commission, so I'm sure we'll get a response back well within that time. Okay. Where did we finish up section 8?
No, that's where we have to start today.
Did we finish section 7?
Yes. That was approved.
Yeah. Now we get to this delightful thing called the views of venerated objects. Roger.
Section 8. Use of venerated objects. A person commits a crime of abuse of venerated objects if he intentionally abuses a public monument or structure, a place of worship or burial, or the national or state flag. And the word abuses, or abuse, is defined in section 1, sub 1, as meaning to deface, damage, defile, or otherwise physically mistreat in a manner likely to outrage ordinary public sensibilities. Some of the substance of section 8 is a restatement of present law, and some of it is new law. We presently have statutes penalizing desecration of the American flag. But a lot of this conduct is covered now under your, what we would call now criminal mischief. In other words, you would have to show some actual damage to the property. Where this statute isn't really aimed at situations where you have actual damage done to real personal property, but where the conduct outrages public sensibilities. There's some examples given here, like painting a swastika on a church, or overturning cemetery headstones, burning flags at public demonstrations. And it also expands a lot of the extent that our present statutes only cover the American flag. It doesn't cover the state flag. Although I think there was a bill introduced, I don't know whether it's in this legislative assembly this year or 2 years ago, proposing that the state flag be included in that statute. But it didn't pass.
Roger, public structure. Would that include anything open to the public, or only those structures owned by a unit of government?
It's intended to mean a structure owned by a governmental agency.
It isn't designed then to be a part of the definition of public place, which appears
no.
in section 1, sub 2.
Well, I take it that this would mean, for example, the mast of the battleship Oregon on Harbor Drive in Portland. And would it mean the courthouse?
Yes. Include state capitol building.
The legislator is not a venerated object.
Oh, I'm gone.
You've been defiled.
Well, as abused as you are, you're not venerated.
What... when we're dealing with the flag, what can you do and what can't you do?
As far as to your research goes, what about if a guy puts a flag around his shoulders, you know, and pins it here, you know, like a cape, and wears it down the street? Now, would that come within this?
Under our definition of abuse, it could only be covered if you considered that a defilement of the flag.
Yeah, what does defile mean?
The present statute is kind of interesting. 162720 sub 4, who publicly mutilates, tramples upon, or publicly defaces, defiles, or by words or act casts contempt upon any flag of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, I think it's either that section or the next one. Do you recall the Meyer and Frank advertisement run on October 15th? They would have been guilty under one of those flag things because they appended an advertisement, which was only M&F.
Well, it's the next section says shall not apply to, that doesn't apply to to the regular issue of a newspaper on which is printed a flag of the U.S. disconnected from any advertisement.
Keep going on, and then it gets down to it.
Well, that's what it says, disconnected from any advertisement.
Yeah, there's a separate section that says if you append a name or something to it.
I think it's up above. I think it's up higher than that.
Oh, exposes any flag upon which is printed, painted, or otherwise placed, or to which is attached, appended, any token, so forth, notice, drawing, or any advertisement of any nature or kind.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I remember in 1966 when I was running, TV people put together a TV spot which consisted of a photograph of me sitting on the bench in the courtroom, and appropriately somber and judicial looking. And I was down at the TV studio watching the thing play, and it looked pretty keen to me, and had burns and big letters all over it and all that kind of thing. And I got back to the office and I got to thinking, by George, there's something wrong with that. And of course they had, in the picture, they had the flag on either side. And so I dug out the statute and called up the advertising agency and says, what the devil are you trying to do, get me thrown in jail and so on.
I think there were two things wrong with it, wasn't it? Under the election laws.
Because they'd been jumping on Hatfield for doing that in the previous election. Well, statute hadn't quite run yet.
Roger, I can't find any horrible big holes in your Section 8. This is one you were all worried about, wasn't it? This doesn't include anything other than physical abuse. It wouldn't include verbal abuse.
Think it'd be wise to include verbal abuse.
Well, it says deface. Suppose they print a sign on the side of the courthouse. Hang a sign, but paint a sign on it.
I think the definition of abuse applies only to physical acts, as I read it.
Well, now this statute won't conflict with the criminal mischief statute.
I was considering that this morning. The only place I can see where it could is that we have included in abuse the word damage. And so therefore, if you've damaged a place of burial, a cemetery headstone, you would be guilty.
An example of a swastika on a church, it now would be covered under defacing it.
Probably defacing and defile, but if you chipped a hole in the church, you could be guilty under both abuse of venerated objects and criminal mischief.
What does the criminal mischief statute mean?
Have 3 degrees of criminal mischief, and the third degree is really just a tampering or interference with property. The second degree involves criminal mischief, and there's damage to property in an amount exceeding $100, or if there's intentional damage opposed to reckless, or if it's reckless in an amount exceeding $100. And then it's criminal mischief in the first degree if with an intent to damage the property, the person damages property of another in an amount exceeding $1,000 or by means of an explosive.
Well, does this present a problem then if you
It wouldn't seem to.
I don't think.
Well, you could probably prosecute under either statute.
Is the penalty going to be different? We might have a possible problem, wouldn't you? Where you deface a church, public building or something, you do a certain amount of damage to it because you're going to have to repaint it.
Okay, then you as a DA could just decide what you want to prosecute it for.
Isn't that a Perkin problem?
No.
To Perkin?
So.
Because you have different elements.
You've got different statutes, first of all. Different statutes and different elements.
One has to be a venerated object.
Yeah.
But now, like, let's say that if it was over $100 damage, you might want to prosecute under the criminal mischief. But if there's a special statute relating to venerated objects, are you going to get yourself thrown out on criminal mischief and just be required to come solely under the venerated objects if you've got one?
No, I don't think so.
You could take it either way if you had the proper elements.
Sure.
To make crime.
I mean, you might have one act that would violate two or three different statutes, but you could decide what to prosecute
for. Yeah, but let's see, there have been trial court ones. I don't know if the Supreme Court ever went up. I know they got the change in the legislature on a statute done. I mean, you've got the malicious mischief for, you know, the personal property now. And then there was injuring or interfering with a motor vehicle that carried a maximum penalty of $10. And down in Brookings, I know, and I ran the same problem there, where they ruled that because there was a special statute involving motor vehicles, and when we had damage to a motor vehicle, you had to come within that, you had to charge under that statute.
Well, what was the basis for the ruling?
Whim.
That there, huh?
Whim.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think there's any legal basis for that kind of ruling, is there?
The quality not unknown among judges. Often termed caprice. Well, does anybody have any strong feelings about Section 8?
I move we adopt the doggy.
Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Abuse of corpse.
Section 9, using the word abuse again. A person commits the crime of abuse of corpse. If except as otherwise authorized by law, he intentionally abuses a corpse.
Now, what's our definition of abuse again?
Section 1.
Debase, damage, defile, or otherwise physically mistreat. And, of course, since I used the same term in connection to two statutes, that's why I have the word damage in abuse.
What would you... Would this displace the disinterment or removal section?
Yeah.
It's
an indictable misdemeanor.
Would it be clear that well, does the definition make it clear that it would that removal would constitute abuse? I suppose you might say it defiles it, but I'm not sure that necessarily.
You mean you conceivably disinter a body without defacing, damaging, or physically mistreating it?
Sure. Just pick the coffin up, move it over to the outside the cemetery or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would. Could
we add in there abuse or?
If he intentionally abuses or disinters a corpse, I guess.
To make sure.
Say. 570 says any person who willfully and wrongfully digs up, disinters, removes, or conveys away any human body or the remains thereof shall be punished and so forth.
All the other ones except disinter would clearly be included in abuse, I think.
I move that we
add to section 9, after the word abuse, we insert or disinter.
Really, that would cover any kind of removal. Disinter would cover it, wouldn't it? It wouldn't necessarily cover an unburied body, huh?
Yeah, I was just thinking if you removed a body from a funeral home.
Well, of course, that would be larceny. That gave the third property right in there.
We do have a chapter, ORS 97, on property rights in human bodies.
Actually, there is property rights.
Yeah.
Could be a theft of. Could it be a theft? Suppose it could, couldn't it?
Of course, with theft, you could run into the problem always of intent to permanently deprive. We don't have any such crime as taking and using.
No, taking and using a body.
The disinterment statute was passed many years ago when it was thought to be somewhat of a problem. The medical
joyriding,
schools were skirting away a lot of bodies.
Joyriding statute.
Well, now, defile is defined by Webster as to make filthy, to befoul, to pollute, to tarnish, to dishonor. Archaic definition is to ravish, to violate.
Does our definition of rape apply only to living persons?
Yeah, and I was going to discuss that if we got into this section and talked about it a little bit. Because at the time we were working on sex offenses, we had in mind that a section such as this would cover necrophilia, for example, and that it shouldn't be in the sex offenses as such.
And I thought the word defile and any abuses would cover that. It would be abuse of the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that
this will be undoubtedly a misdemeanor, whether one feels that that type of abuse of the court is a more severe penalty. I would think ordinarily a defendant in those cases would be committed a mental institution.
Well, do you think we need anything beyond the word disinters as an amendment?
Well, as I said, the only problem I could foresee, if the body was removed before it was interred, you might not have to tell it. But I don't think we can include the word removes without some qualifying language.
No.
Well,
I think it probably should be covered. Like that, it might be covered in larceny, but I doubt it.
Well, the present statute uses disinters, removes, or conveys away.
Well, why don't we use disinters, removes, or conveys away?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that cover it?
We have the qualification of without lawful authority.
Yeah.
Take care of
well,
the authority.
Well, yeah. I think if we're going to do that, we might be better off having a sub 1 and a sub 2.
Oh, for drafting.
If except as otherwise authorized by law, he intentionally, one, abused the courts or disinters or removed and carries away.
Yeah. Now, do you want to make your amendment that far?
I'll accept that for my amendment.
Um, amendment agreeable to you?
Yeah.
Let's treat it as amendment.
Now, that's to make two sections, one on the abuse and the other to disinter.
Disinter and carries.
Well, it'd just be one section, but two subsections.
Two subsections.
Yeah.
How about conceal? Do we want this in there?
Well, remove it would cover it.
Well,
maybe it would.
A situation where it might not, because we're getting more into what do we have in the way of crimes for failure to
report a death?
Report a death.
There is a crime on failure to report a death of an illegitimate child. I'm not sure whether that's limited to illegitimate child.
I wonder if the police were looking for a body and a person knew where the body was and didn't move it but concealed it, pull a screen around in front of it so it can't be readily seen or something this way.
Of course, that'd be more in the area of interference with administration of justice or something, not in this area.
Yeah, I think
we could pick it up.
Yeah, I think we'd have that covered under our obstructing.
Roger, let me ask you this. In your summary, you say deals with the sensibilities of surviving kin occasioned by mutilation or gross neglect. Now, what do you mean by gross neglect? Is that, you talk about intentionally?
I think that phrase doesn't belong there.
Because as I recall, our culpability.
Because under my definition of abuse, I'm really talking about some intentional act.
Yeah, I mean, you've got intentionally in
negligent.
The section.
I'm not talking about negligent acts.
Where does the gross neglect come in, Jim?
It's in the summary, second line of the summary.
Oh.
Seems to me we should take that out of the summary when we pick up the amendment. The other thing I wonder about is when you say except as otherwise authorized by law, can we safely conclude that research and medical education and so on is in fact authorized by law? Is there a specific statute on that?
Yeah, there are specific Oregon statutes on those.
Okay. Any further discussion on Section 9? All in favor of approving Section 9, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carry.
We are really whipping through these.
Oh, yeah. Get all done before Clark gets here.
I should
mention.
We're
taking up jails.
I should mention one thing that we'll add to that commentary also is a reference to necrophilia. I think
yes.
It should be in there.
Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. 10.
Cruelty to animals.
Welcome, Graziella Boucher.
The person commits the crime of cruelty to animals if, except as otherwise authorized by law, he intentionally or recklessly, sub 1, subjects any animal to cruel mistreatment, 2, subjects an animal in his custody to cruel neglect, or 3, kills any animal belonging to another. There's one question I have in connection with sub 3. The model penal code uses the language kills or injures any animal belonging to another without legal privilege or consent of the owner. The last Oregon case, which was 1920 on cruelty to animals, involved the acquittal of a man who was charged with killing a cow that was attempting to break into his hay corral. And they felt that wasn't culpable. It wasn't a wanton act. So I don't know if we should have, whether we should have the same, some language indicating that if you kill an animal belonging to another with some, there can be some cases where you have legal privilege to do so.
Presumably in that case he had a legal privilege.
Yes. He
defend
his own property.
I noticed that killing an animal belonging to another appears in both the model penal code in Michigan. I'm wondering, isn't that actually a larceny?
Doing what?
If you kill somebody else's animal, I walk over and shoot your cow.
No.
No. There's no taking and carrying away.
What well, if you doing? Carried it away, but if you just left it lay there, it certainly wouldn't be.
Well, our present statutes in this area are rather confusing.
Courtesy of Graciela Boucher.
We have now 164.710 covers killing, wounding, or poisoning animals, and that requires malicious or wanton conduct or willful administering of poison, and that provides for a maximum punishment of 3 years in the penitentiary. And also there's a subsection in there covering trespassing. Or hunters who shoots an animal, and that's a misdemeanor with a maximum of 1 year. And then taking away an animal without consent is an indictable misdemeanor with a maximum of 2 years in the penitentiary. But then we also have the cruelty to animals section under 167.740. And there, that covers beating, mutilating, or cruelly killing an animal. Now, that's just a straight misdemeanor. If you cruelly kill the animal, the most you can get is 60 days in the county jail. But if you
maliciously
or wantonly kill him, you can get 3 years.
Yeah, that's pretty.
It's kind of hard to sort out the cyanide there.
Is that 483 citation to the failing to stop and help an animal if you hit him with a car?
Yes.
We aren't messing around with that statute.
No, this wouldn't affect that.
What about under section 3, belonging to another on hunting? I'm sure we're not intending to include this. I don't think it would be necessary maybe to put it in the statutory definition, but maybe in the commentary. That
well, wild animals don't belong to anyone.
Well,
doctrine of rationale soli.
They belong to the state. But by the
soli?
Long time
that's
long.
Good.
Quick. You can tell the hunters in the crowd.
But by the same token, I mean, if you killed one in the zoo, there would certainly be a property right and an interest in it, even though it is a wild animal.
Well, that belongs to another, though.
Well, but the thing it is, and the question that you get into, which I did in a case down here in Corvallis, where a couple guys went into the zoo and the bow and arrow shot a couple, three of the deer there, that I was anticipating a problem that the defense never raised, but for deer, you have to get a permit from the state to hold a wild animal in custody. And I was using the argument that once you get this license from the state, that there's a person has a property right, or like the city of Corvallis has a property right in these deer that would subject the person to the penalty. And my problem was is that they kind of get a perennial license on these things. Didn't have one for that year, and we couldn't find any license, and I was able to get by with the zoo director, park director, just testifying that they had gotten the permission from the state to keep them there and that type of thing, so that we didn't get down into the nitty gritty. The best evidence problem was concerning me to no end, but to prove that the city had an interest in them, I felt that we could get by with this permit that you have to get from the state.
Roger, I notice your commentary down at the bottom of page 54. It says there are a number of existing penal statutes that would be repealed. A few others deal with specific problems that should be retained, and then you list a number of statutes. Now, some of these appear to be ones that would quite obviously be retained, such as the driver's duty to help animals and so on, but others would, I take it.
No, for example, ORS 603.310, inhumane slaughter prohibited, that wouldn't be repealed.
They're dealing with a specific that's part of your problem in slaughterhouses.
Right.
It's, you got to kill them with a club or a something or other. But other sections listed here would be repealed, such as cruelty to animals,
yes.
I take it, and attempting to poison and killing and wounding.
Just your 160 series would be the only to be repealed by this draft, I think. 164.
Take in abandonment?
Yes, under subsection 2.
Would abandonment be deemed cruel mistreatment?
No, but it would be cruel neglect.
Oh, I see.
Sub 1 applies to any animal, and looking at this from the individual's point of view, any animal. Number 2 applies only to animals that are within his custody. And then number 3 applies to any animal that belongs to another.
I noticed the comparable statute has kills or injures.
Yes.
And I wonder if there's a reason why you leave out injuries.
Because I think it would be covered under sub 1.
Oh, I see. It
subjects any animal to cruel mistreatment.
Well, what's cruel mistreatment?
I just question the fact that you can't itemize every form of cruelty to animals.
Can we help your definition of animals by putting domestic animals?
Now that is the point that interests me the most, the definition of animals, but we won't get...
problem there.
We didn't define animals.
Are we really talking about domesticated or animal subject to domestication?
Well, under sub 1, for example, we're talking about any animal. Subjects any animal to cruel mistreatment.
Well, how do you submit a water, or how do you subject a wild animal to cruel mistreatment? I suppose you pin them up, don't you? Leave them and don't give them food.
Well, in that particular example, you'd probably be covered by sub 2 because the animal would then be in your custody and you'd be subjected to cruel neglect. I don't know, for example, under number 1, if you hunt, whether you could be charged under the statute under sub 1 on these bow and arrow hunts that they have where the hunters, you'll sometimes down an animal, but you don't have enough interest in it to track it after it's been badly wounded, so you just say the hell with it and go on.
Aren't there some specific statutes in your game code, I think, that that kind of thing, and, you know, setting of traps and
lures and snares,
untended traps and things like that.
You know, I really wonder if the wild animal situation shouldn't be treated in the game provisions. This is a matter of policy. We're really talking about domestic animals, and we're talking about cruelty to animals, I would think.
Well, I think it is, and I don't think this would disturb any of your game code.
I consider that. One of the problems is we use the word domestic, for example. Does a domestic, does the word domestic include a pet giraffe, or a pet alligator, pet bobcat, pet skunk?
Cheetah.
I used to have a pet skunk. Pet cheetah.
Dr. Nicholson used to have pet cheetahs. Or jaguars, one or the other.
Well, I think that this statute should apply to any wild animal that has been
include birds?
Corralled.
Not include birds?
Well, you see, on the paragraph 2 of the summary, I said no attempt made to find animals. I didn't want to get in night-crawling worms and duck-billed platypuses.
Well, is our approach then maybe the one that an animal that's in custody rather than limiting custody to sub 2 of treating definition of the animal covered by cruelty to animals as being one which has been reduced to custody?
In other words, exempting as to this statute,
as to
all
this,
wild animals.
Right. Well, it wouldn't necessarily be all wild animals, but all wild animals not reduced to custody. And would still include, I'm sure, even animals running on the range, cows that are... Do we have any open range anymore?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really are subject to custody, I assume, if they're...
Well, animal actually is presently defined in ORS, but it doesn't do any is defined as all moved creatures.
Well, and that's just for the purpose of that section, too, the transportation section.
I would think that might be one answer to the problem.
What is that again now, Dave?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that in section 10 that we limit, we define animals for which a sanction could be imposed by section 10 to those animals which have been reduced to custody. Require a custodial right, at least, to the animal before you treat it with cruelty, which would exempt all the wild animals. And then the crazy things that Rogers brought up, like night crawlers and clams. Boy, I can see some fights coming up. Clam bed, or the oyster beds over in Newport are a very hot subject with pollution and...
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, well, there's also some kind of a virus or something of that nature that could be introduced with the importation of bad, whatever the seeds are for oysters, and kill off oyster beds.
Yeah, you've got.
Of course, those are subject to custody, aren't they? Didn't help that one any.
You've got quite a host of statutes in the game code dealing with birds and beavers and everything else.
Ducks.
Poisoning or placing poison accessible to birds, using live birds as targets, possession, destruction, or sale of nests or eggs of wild birds, burning reeds and tules where birds nest, destruction or injury of muskrat houses.
How'd you like to have that on your rap sheet?
Using electrical device on fish, substances in fish, poisoning fish, taking and holding captive young game birds and animals.
Is there a definition section in the game code, Don?
Well, there is a section. They define things like game animals.
They define wild animals.
And game birds, game fish.
Well, they're defined by species, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But there's no definition of an animal as such.
Wasn't there just a recent Oregon incident involving cruelty to some fish, some large
fish?
Yeah,
sturgeon. They cut up some sturgeon up at Bonneville Hatchery.
Yeah. See, those are subjected to custody. They are.
But I'm sure you'd argue that a fish is not an animal if you were charged.
Well, weren't those breeders up in the ponds? The sturgeon were mutilated?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that actually would be property of the state, I assume, is to reduce to custody as a wild animal. Mm-hmm. That would be covered by some breed.
Yeah, well, did any of them die? I guess maybe one or two of them did. Some of them were just pretty badly slashed.
Yeah, and, well, there's a special chapter here, too, that covers hatcheries and refuges and reservations and things like that, so...
Well, maybe we could make the commentary short. I don't know. I think that's probably a good distinction, though. If the critter has been in somebody's custody, why, that's the one we want to protect in this.
I'm sure that's something that Roger could draft. There's no problem whatsoever.
Would you care to phrase the amendment?
I would move it.
No, that could be drafted without getting into the problem of defining what is an animal and what isn't an animal, merely by saying animal is used in this section, but only applies to those animals that have come under the custody of control.
Custody of control. Why would so move?
See what the dictionary says.
Animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty broad definition.
Any member of the group of living beings typically capable of spontaneous movement and rapid motor response to stimulation is distinguished from the plant.
Everything.
Yes,
yeah,
that covers sure. Virus.
Sure.
People.
Sea urchins.
Well, yes, because under our present definition, animal, all brute creatures. My wife's called me an animal many times.
Human cruelty, too. Now, one thing I thought we ought to discuss, too, in connection with this section, is whether or not we should try, if you think that there's any reason to try to distinguish between mistreatment or cruelty and intentional killing of an animal. Do you think that... think this is overbroad to lump all these things together?
I think there are so many things that you can do that would constitute cruelty. I ran across an acquaintance who knows someone who gets his kicks by blowing marijuana into a plastic bag and putting the pet kitty in the bag, and the cat gets high. Everybody enjoys himself immensely, except the cat, I said. Now that, I'm sure, is cruelty to an animal. But if you try to get down and define all the possible things that could constitute cruelty.
But do you think that you think killing should be looked upon more severely than mistreating an animal?
For penalty, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Of course, this section, as long as you don't do it cruelly, gives you the right to kill your own animal. I mean, you can destroy your own dog or cat.
Well, do you see any difficulty with the term cruel mistreatment?
Yeah, what's cruel mistreatment? What's the difference between mistreatment and cruel mistreatment?
Of course, we've lived with a statute like that, apparently.
Yeah, and I think cruel is has a well-defined...
Overdrive, says any person who overdrives, overloads, drives when overloaded, overworks, tortures, torments, deprives of necessary sustenance, cruelly beats, mutilates, or cruelly kills, and so forth.
Well, cruel is defined by Webster as disposed to give pain to others, inhuman, merciless. Cruelty, the quality of being cruel.
Great.
Oddly enough, the only two cases that went up where the defendant was convicted involved the same man, 3 years apart. Two different animals. Mr. Goodall didn't take very good care of his cows and horses.
Frank, do you have any... great thoughts on this. You haven't been opposing Dave very much today.
No,
no,
Dave's basically been on the right track today, and I didn't want to get him off of it.
That frightens me.
I'm not going to torment him or... No, I don't know. The cruel mistreatment bothers me. As a practical matter, it probably doesn't make any difference.
How many cases do you have?
Yeah.
Well, you've had cruelty in animals cases, though, under present statutes, haven't you, Frank?
Oh, I've had one or two.
There's nothing more calculated to stir up the newspaper, excuse me, man. I had one involving a chicken rancher who was going slowly broke and didn't feed his chickens. And there was just one heck of a public outcry about these poor chickens. He could have gone out and cut off all their heads very cleanly and neatly, nobody would mind it. DA with a death wish.
Well, are you in favor of Dave's amendment to redraft it?
Yeah.
To provide that animals in custody.
I think you need that. I think it should be, if we say person, we should also make sure that we're also, in the custody of any public body or something like that.
What do you think about what Don says? Should there be a distinction between killing and mistreating? One problem I see with that, Don, is that there are some animals that I think would, if you'd kill them, it'd be a lot less exciting than if you killed others, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're animals and they're animals.
Yeah, right.
The mistreatment of one might, we're talking about outraging public sensibility here a minute ago, and if you kill one kind of an animal, it wouldn't be near as reprehensible as mistreating another. Right. Higher forms and so on, so called.
Shoot your neighbor's chickens and shoot his dog.
Well, yeah, I'm suppose you shoot the chicken, nobody's going to get really very excited about that, as opposed to hanging a cat up by its tail on the clothesline or something, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
Dave, do you want to draw a distinction between killing and mistreating?
And of course, this could be discussed further when we come to grading of this. Now, I think, you know, it might make some difference how you decide to grade these offenses. Mm-hmm. That you do have some felonies in there now, or at least indictable misdemeanors with respect to certain conduct on animals. Whether you would want to leave this as a straight misdemeanor or leave some option there.
I would think in most instances, cruelty is more socially reprehensible than killing an animal, unlike human beings.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to.
From the standpoint of the animal, certainly, I would think that'd be true. But maybe from the standpoint of the owner, of course, here you're trying to protect the animal rather than the owner, I suppose. But I mean, you might mistreat an animal belonging to somebody else and still really not deprive him of the value of the animal in the long run, but if you kill him, he's gone forever. But
I would hate to see this statute itself, just the way it is now, in the felony category. I mean, even though it could be treated as a misdemeanor, in sentencing, where you've got to go through the preliminary hearing, the grand jury, and all.
Yeah.
The 12-man jury trial is one of the things that bothers me about the indictable misdemeanor situation.
You ruined the whole thing. I wonder why you eat that. And you often get a spoon.
There are some cases in those indictable misdemeanor categories that just plain old deserve misdemeanor treatment.
Did you make those?
And,
made them on her electric
tablet. No, I would think this should be a misdemeanor. I don't think it's necessary to have a felony.
I move we adopt Section 10 subject to the amendments, the sense of the amendments that we have adopted.
Could I mention one other thing before you vote on this?
No.
if you promise not to laugh. no, now our present sodomy statutes include
you didn't promise.
Let me finish now.
I broke my promise.
Question.
No, really. Our present sodomy statutes, this is just for your information. As you know, it covers sexual relations with animals.
It's called bestiality, isn't it?
Well, it's called bestiality, you know,
it's
popularly, but
a
it's a sexual perversity, you know. And this covers quite a range of conduct. But now, in our new approach to sex offenses, we haven't included in our definition of sodomy intercourse with an animal. And so this section here would be broad enough to cover that kind of conduct, rather than handling it as a sexual offense. If you had what would be thought of as sodomy with an animal, it would no longer be covered as a sexual offense because our new sodomy draft just deals with intercourse, deviant intercourse between persons.
Of course, I would think it'd be a subjective evaluation of whether the animal considered a cruel mistreatment.
You're reading my mind. Who's going to sign a complaint?
Well, there have been prosecutions under that.
Oh, yeah.
And
You must recall the area of the country that the chairman of our commission comes from, too, and his Basque friends who were...
Well, I'll tell you about our famous chicken case from Lane County sometime.
Yeah,
we
won't
go into it.
That story.
I think this is the proper thing for Wally Carson and Lee Johnson.
But really, this is... And the other states have taken the same approach, too, that this kind of conduct, sexual conduct with an animal, would be considered cruelty to animals rather than sodomy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's well to be aware of this so that when the people start jumping on us on our liberal sex views, that we'll be able to point out to them that we still consider such activity a crime. It is coming.
Well, is that what they did in Michigan, though?
Yeah, it is.
I think I probably should have something in the commentary as a sub one indicating that.
Yeah, I noted my copy here about that. But,
I noticed most of the other state statutes that include that, the sodomy statutes, also includes birds. In other words, they say animals and birds.
Well, that wouldn't be a correct definition under Webster. It would be redundant. Well, why don't you just throw bestiality into the commentary someplace?
No. That agreeable to you?
That's agreeable.
Agreeable with all. Approved as approved with the amendments and the drafting suggestions mentioned. Now, section 11.
Falsely reporting an incident. A person commits the crime of falsely reporting an incident if he knowingly initiates or circulates a false report concerning an alleged or impending fire, explosion, crime, catastrophe, or other emergency under circumstances causing or likely to cause public inconvenience or alarm.
Good thing Drew Pearson is dead.
This is intended to cover the yelling fire in a theater and anything.
Calling the school and saying that the bomb planted them will go off. And
under our perjury article, we have another statute that reaches somewhat similar conduct, false firing police reports.
Would this duplicate it?
No, it has a different requirement.
This would be different. I mean,
it involves direct reports.
It would require knowledge on the part of the initiator as to the falseness of the report. Am I right?
Yeah, the knowingly refers to the to false.
Right. It's knowingly false, not just knowingly circulates.
Well,
no, it isn't. Not the way it's written, is it?
Yeah.
Knowingly initiates, knowingly circulates.
A false report.
No. False report is the object of circulates and initiates. Knowingly is an adverb modifying initiates or circulates. I've been helping my 11-year-old with her grammar.
I'm glad of that. I notice you've been contributing substantially more lately.
All I know. No. But I think what we intend to mean is that knowingly, that knowing that it's false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good.
Should the knowingly.
What you would mean was
if he initiates or circulates a knowing.
If he intentionally initiates or circulates a false report he knows to be false, or a report he knows to be false.
Well, that gets into.
Falsely reporting an incident if knowing that the same is false, he initiates or circulates a false report concerning.
What do you mean by initiate?
It's to start, isn't it?
Well, what do you cover by initiate that you don't cover by circulate?
Means that you take, you pass on a rule.
Well, right now I'm thinking about calling up the chief of police of Salem and saying there's a bomb in the state capitol. All I'm doing is thinking about it. But the minute I tell you about it, then I start circulating it.
How about using the word publish like we do in the slander and libel?
I hate to bring over some.
What is it?
Pardon me. He heard about it. Geez, I'm glad we don't have this statute in force.
What is that, though?
That's a is that
fire.
That's a police car here. That's the strangest air whistle I've ever heard.
That sounds like a riot type of.
Something about outer space.
Well, initiates or circulates is the popular language in this area. Model Penal Code uses it. New York, Michigan, and Connecticut have all used that identical phrase.
They knew what they were doing.
Well, they use both terms because they don't want people creating false reports. They don't want people passing on false reports.
This would catch the guy that starts it and the guy that carries it forward.
Why not use the Model Penal Code language? How do we differ?
Well, there they say bombing or other crime or catastrophe.
We'll leave out bombing, just impending crime or catastrophe. This has the knowing that the report or warning is false or baseless. It's likely to cause evacuation or public inconvenience or alarm.
What about, like, the California earthquake? Predicting on a certain date the western half of California was going to slide into the sea.
See, but those people would never have said that they knew it was false. They believed it.
Well, I don't think you'd have a difficult time convincing the jury.
Jury question.
Sure did, on the basis of it. Really intense.
I suppose you could argue that under circumstances causing or likely to cause public inconvenience or alarm, you could say, well, nobody but a dang fool like these people would believe that such was the case.
It's a great defense.
My client
is a nut. Who'd ever believe him?